As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I thank you all for joining us. With me in the studio today, it's a packed studio, which makes me very, very happy. No weirdo phone lines, no heavy breathing from Ollie Kay. No, it's the clarion tones of Alison Rudd. It's the somewhat younger clarion tones of James Gerbrandt. And it's the Bury St. Edmunds inflected tones of Manchester United fan James Scowcroft. The Premier League season is over, but we're going to do things a little bit differently today because, frankly, I thought yesterday's games were kind of all sort of nonsense, especially once Liverpool scored. So, instead, we're going to be handing out report cards. Very simple format here, guys. I'm sure you've all prepared for it. This is how it's going to work. You're going to give a report card for the Premier League season. I'm going to keep track of it. If there is some disagreement, in other words, if one of you gives Chelsea an F, you can argue it out. If not, we will move on. Hopefully, we'll all be of the same mindset. Now, I know for a fact that James Gerbrandt prepared. You did prepare because I saw your notes. Alison's just getting her notes, and James Scowcroft is pretending to get his notes.
The season's not over yet.
No, the season is over. The Premier League season is over.
Well, how'd you grade Manchester United season when they're in a European Cup final?
I only grade them for the Premier League.
Oh, right.
Alison, you get to choose whether we start at the top or at the bottom. And work our way up.
Oh, let's do it like the pop charts and go from bottom up.
Okay. Sunderland finish last in the table. As you probably know, they'll be relegated under Scoey's mate David Moyes and my mate David Moyes. Alison.
E.
There are no E's.
Why not?
Because we're using an American grading system.
Why?
Because I said so.
No, but we're English.
Can you define the grading system first?
A, B, C, D, F. You can give pluses or minuses. There is no E.
A, B, C, D, F.
A, B, C, D, F. It's not bizarre. No E. I've decided. In the past, we've allowed E's, but I'm turning over a new leaf.
Okay, F.
F. Gerbrandt?
Yeah, I concur with that.
Scoey?
Yes, F.
All right.
What's
see?
Yours? You've got to give yours.
Me? I only speak if I disagree, and I tell you why you're wrong. No, it has to be an F, I think, because they finished last, they went down, and there are mitigating factors here. Moyes appointed late, blah, 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 but poor signings, poor football. And also, people say what a horrible squad it was. People make it seem as if everybody's terrible there, except for Defoe and Watmore. I don't think so. I actually think they have some useful players. It just didn't come together for them. Oh, and Pickford, of course, who everybody loves. Middlesbrough, Gerbrandt.
I've gone for a D minus for Middlesbrough.
Scoey?
I've gone for an F.
I'll go D minus.
Yeah, I'm going to give them a D minus as well. One of the things is they defended very well. Something clearly happened behind the scenes, which is why Karanka left. Maybe we'll get the full truth one day. I don't think they played horrendous football. They just were kind of bad in the final third of the pitch. Hull City. Now, bear in mind, we're talking about the whole season here, so you can't just go off Marcus Silva and how much we like him because he's the future of football. You have to include Mr. Phelan as well. Scoey.
C.
Alison.
D.
Yeah, I've gone for D as well.
I'm going to be a little more generous. I'm going to say C minus when you consider the fact that A, Phelan was there, Bruce quitting, the ownership situation.
Oh, hang on then. We need to completely clarify. When you give somebody a mark, you're not just giving the managers you quite like a mark. You're giving the club a mark, and the club were appallingly run, and their summer kicking off in the Premier League was a disgrace.
We're giving one grade to the team, basically. And I think all the extraneous factors here didn't.
Right,
no. It should offer some mitigating level.
I think they're always doomed from the start, and they made a fist of it.
Okay. They get a C-. Watford. Alison.
Oh, probably one of the harder ones, to be honest. They were everything this season. Surprising, surprisingly good, surprisingly drab. Gave Graham Taylor a lovely send-off. I'd give them a C.
Keir Brandt?
I think I'd maybe be a little more harsh, just because Mazzarri, I think, failed to win over the fans, so maybe a D plus.
Scully?
C-.
Yeah, I'm going C-, too. It's two ways about it. They did stay up, and then they just tanked the rest of the season, which is disappointing, but then also when you have a manager who knows he wants to leave and wasn't able to learn the language, probably wasn't the right appointment to begin with, in my opinion. Burnley, who finished level on points with Watford. Gearbrandt.
C-plus for Burnley. And you could even maybe argue that's a bit harsh.
Scully?
Burnley, I've gone for B.
Alison?
B for Burnley. I mean, come on. He was being touted as manager of the season just if they stayed up. So, Sean Dyche was. So, right. I think anything less than a B is a bit mean.
I think it definitely is, which is why I'm giving them an A-. Swansea. Scully.
C.
Alison?
No, this is so difficult. This is so difficult because the new American owners and Hugh Jenkins deserve an F.
Minus.
An F minus, because they seem to do the best they could to ensure they got relegated. I mean, the appointment of Bob Bradley was stupidity in the extreme.
It's a bit harsh.
It was stupid. The guy knew nothing about the Premier League.
Thank you, Mrs. Merson.
And he meddled so heavily with the defence, it really did take them a while to recover from that. So then there's the Great Escape and the fact that through the Great Escape, they continually played either quite attractive or very attractive football, and they possess the best player in the league. So I'll give them a B+.
Best player in the league with Gylfi Sigurdsson. Gearbrandt?
I think taking the kind of overall season into account, I think a C.
Yeah, I know. B+ sounds like all Gylfi. Gylfi can get an A++, but I think Swansea, we're going to go C.
And they entertained us. I mean, how many people had them down as, oh yeah, they're going to, this is the year they get relegated? And they didn't. I mean, I didn't, but a lot of people thought they would. They have given us one of the few surprises of the season.
Scully, Palace, your mates.
Not your mate, so. Difficult one.
Everything's a difficult one.
It is very true. I would say with the squad they have 2 weeks ago, they're in a lot of trouble, really. So you'd have to sort of mark them down. I'd have to say it's a disappointing season. I won't go for D. I'll go for a C-. But they need to improve. I think with the wage bill and everything they have now, then I think Steve Parrish said yesterday on social media, time to break into the top 10, and I agree with that.
Wonder if you'll be there when they do. Alison.
Go for a C, which is a slight cop-out mark. They did the right thing, I suppose, in appointing Sam Allardyce, because they needed an escape route, and they got one. But they did lose 4-0 at home to Sunderland, and I'm not quite sure any team manages to contrive that result.
They did win away at Chelsea.
Yeah, but that was really, really lucky. That was not a good win. They had good wins. There's good wins, and there's wins when you're just incredibly lucky.
They won
lucky.
Away at Anfield.
That was a better win.
And they beat Arsenal at home.
Arsenal. Gearbrandt.
A bit like Swansea, it was a season of two halves. I've gone for a C. But I actually think Sam Allardyce did really well to keep them up ultimately.
I'm gonna go C-, because I think Sam Allardyce should have done better. I expected him to do better, and I think he thought he could do better when he took over. Because you remember they got those results and then they were terrible. Something happened there at some point.
He didn't have a great start, Sam, did he?
No.
Took him a long time to get going.
Admittedly, of course, he was inheriting all of Alan Pardew's negativity. So, Palace get a C-. Stoke, Alison.
D. They've just been boring.
Gearbrandt.
Yeah, I agree. Stoke have disappointed me. I've given them a D as well.
Scully.
C-.
Not much love for Sparky there. I'm going to go D+. Leicester City. Let's not forget the defending champions finishing 12th and 44 points. Gearbrandt.
C minus.
Scoey?
C.
Alison?
I'm going to give them a B. I don't think you should mark them down too hard because they were the reigning champions. They didn't embarrass the English Premier League in Europe at all. And
nah, we're only going by Premier League.
No, you can take what you like to inform your grade. And Craig Shakespeare really surprised me. I thought he was going to bomb.
Leicester get a C minus. West Ham, Scoey, World Cup winners.
Exactly, C.
Alison?
It has to be a C.
C plus.
I was disappointed by them. I thought they were going to kick on, should have kicked on. I'm going to give them a D plus. West Bromwich Albion. Come on, this is the team everybody wants to be talking about. Alison?
B plus. Because all the Deloitte style reports had them as projected to finish 18th, given their overall outlay. So they've done jolly good.
James?
I think taking into account their rather lame end to the season, I think B minus.
Scoey?
B.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a B as well. And I would have given them an A minus if not for the end of the season. I didn't like seeing that. Bournemouth, who finished 9th in the table. In fact, level on points with 8th place Southampton. Scoey?
B.
Alison?
A minus, I think.
B plus.
I'm going to go B plus, but I will say this. When I buy a football club and hire Eddie Howe, and he says, I want to go spend $20 million on a guy who I'm never going to play because I'd rather play this no-name who ends up doing a much better job, I'm going to hold him to account for that. You don't spend my money. Clearly, he's painted himself in a corner. He can do very well on a shoestring, so let's not give him any money. Southampton. Scoey.
B.
Ooh. Allison.
B. They've again been boring, but 8's pretty good.
Yeah, I went with B as well.
I'm going to go B as well, and I don't like the fact that the fans, well, we're going to get to this later, but the fans were all insulting Puel and wanted him out. I mean, yes, they were a million points behind, but like every year, they sell players. And they lost Virgil van Dijk, who's the whole defense. Everton, 7th in the table, 61 points. 32 points behind Chelsea. Come on, they have the billionaire owner now, Ronald Koeman. You're the president of Ronald Koeman Fan Club, Alison. What do you give Everton?
Struggling to give them more than a B. I still felt that Koeman could have squeezed a bit more pizzazz out of that team.
Bearing in mind that they're about 15 points or so better off than they were last season, I've given them a B plus.
C plus.
Yeah, I'm going C plus as well. You have like the second leading scorer in the league. You have Ross Barkley, who's supposedly this phenom who's going to redefine football. And the fact is, you finish 8 points behind Manchester United, who kind of stopped playing in April. Which brings us to Manchester United. Alison, for the record, they finished 6 points behind Arsenal in 5th.
C.
This is just a Premier League. C? Okay. James?
Yeah, on purely the Premier League, I've gone with a C as well.
Let's see if he's harsher. I think he will be harsher. I think he knows.
C minus.
C minus?
Yeah.
I thought you might have gone even lower. But
I think, although it is marking on the Premier League, I think you have to take into debate that their season has gone off in a different direction than they probably first thought.
They were also a little bit unlucky. I thought they played better than their results.
Can't score goals.
At home. But they played better than their results. Come on.
What's your mark?
I'm giving them a C minus because I still expected. I expected them to finish first or second this year. I believe in Mourinho and Ibrahimovic and whatever. Arsenal finish 5th, 1 point away from the 4th place trophy. Gearbat.
Arsenal is a tough one because obviously they've failed in their main objective for the first time in basically 2 decades. But
they failed. You fail them.
However, they have got a lot of points for, I think, a historic amount of points for a 5th place team.
Oh, come on, because of all the bad teams at the bottom of the table.
I've given them a C.
Scoey?
D.
Ooh, I'll give them a C plus.
C plus?
Mm-hmm.
Way too generous, man. Arsenal get a C minus as well, just like United. Liverpool, who finished top 4 for the second time in the last 8 seasons. Scoey?
B.
Alison.
A minus.
Yeah, I think a good job by Liverpool, considering they don't really have any of the truly outstanding individuals in the league, in my opinion.
Your thanks, you, by the way.
He's close to that bracket, but I don't
Coutinho,
think he's in
Lallana,
it.
Lallana, Ronaldo.
But I don't think they're the equal of players like Sanchez or Kane or Hazard. I mean, I think very good season. I give them a B.
I'm going to go B plus, modulated also, let's not forget, by the fact that they weren't playing European football this year, which also will apply to Chelsea later. Manchester City, third in the table, 78 points, just 2 points more than Liverpool. Scoey.
C.
Allison.
C minus. They annoyed me so much.
C.
Yeah, I think we'll go C minus. 15 points behind Chelsea. It's not good. Spurs, Gearbrandt.
A minus for Spurs.
Scoey.
B plus.
Straight A.
Straight A from me, too. I don't know what you guys are smoking, but which one of you said B plus? You?
Yeah.
B plus.
What's their record against the top six like? They're supposed to be the greatest team in the league, play the best football.
They are.
What's their record in the top six like against the other top six?
Sounds like you get more points for beating the top six.
No.
The record against the top six, you want to know?
Yeah.
Okay, well, this season they won 8, drew 1, and lost 1. So there. They took 25 out of a possible 30 points in top six. By the way, none of this is true, but I know that Scoey doesn't actually know what the record against the top six is, so I'm going to try to trick him. So he's actually very, very good. And finally, the champions, Chelsea. Scoey?
A.
A plus.
I've put A, but I think you've got to almost veer towards an A plus. I mean, it's the second biggest points title in Premier League history.
And a record number of victories as well.
And they've adapted quickly when things have gone wrong, which is the sign of greatness.
Let's give them an A, but here's a question for you. Do they have a better squad than Tottenham?
Well, no, probably not. I mean, it's fairly equal. When we do our team of the season in the next show, I suspect that we have an equal number of Spurs and Chelsea players in it, and that'll go for most football fans.
There you go. So there you have it. Congratulations to Chelsea, Tottenham, who get A's, Burnley, A-, Bournemouth and Liverpool, B+, Southampton and West Brom, B's. We have a very generous panel here. Only one team got an F. Hang your heads, Sunderland. Our newspaper led with this yesterday, at least football-wise. John Terry played his final game at Stamford Bridge for Chelsea. But there was quite a bit of controversy because in the 26th minute of the game, 26 being John Terry's shirt number, the ball was put out of play and he got a guard of honor and he exited the pitch and it kind of delayed the game for 30 seconds, a minute. A lot of people are very upset by this. Allison, would you like to articulate why?
They're upset because... it's just not very classy. On Friday at his press conference, Antonio said he wouldn't tell us whether he was going to start with Terry or bring him on or what was going to happen. It was going to be a surprise. And I thought, that's nice. That would be good. A surprise would be good. And instead you get something that's orchestrated by the player. It's a bit like saying, "Oh, it's my birthday. I'm kind of scared no one loves me, so I'm going to arrange someone to jump out of a cake and I'll pretend to be surprised. In fact, I'll arrange a surprise party and go, oh, really? You all love me?" It's just a bit naff that he had to negotiate with his manager. He had to negotiate with the opposition manager to enable this to happen. Contrast it with Xavi Alonso's goodbye at Bayern Munich, where he looked genuinely surprised at the number of people who wanted to hug him as he was substituted, and he was holding it in, and I almost cried myself watching it because it was proper spur of the moment love as opposed to something just so saccharine. That all the great things that Terry means to everybody at that club, and I'm not denying he isn't an iconic player for that club and that they love him, it seems to be slightly spoiled. If they love him that much, why can't they just show it in a sort of natural way rather than an orchestrated one?
Do we know for a fact that he set all this up?
Well, he said he did.
That he organised everything?
Yeah, he said he wanted to go off in the 26th minute. He had to convince his manager to do it and he had to ask David Moyes if he would mind stopping play.
And David
Moyes... James was there. Wasn't that the story?
Yeah, he said he negotiated it with Conte. That was how Terry put it.
Yeah, if this is true, and he said it, why would you go and admit it afterwards? Aren't you showing a complete lack of awareness?
Well, someone's got to own up to it, haven't they?
Why?
Because it's one of the most orchestrated things I've ever seen on a football pitch. So someone's come up with the idea.
No, I know.
You can say, "Oh, no, it just happened like that."
Yeah, but do you think if you'd said, like, if Conte afterward made a joke, said, it's minute 26, and, you know, I thought it would be fun, it would be a nice tribute to get JT off in that minute. If he just said that, then we wouldn't be making a big deal out of it.
Do you not think people would have noticed? Do you not think people would have, like, seen the footage of Diego Costa talking to Pickford and Pickford kicking the ball straight out of play and thought, that's a bit suspicious?
I don't know. I just think... I
it would have been hilarious if they'd have kept the ball in and it'd come off on the 28th minute, wouldn't it?
Well, he did end up going off in the 28th minute because it took so long to make his to do all the hugs and form the guard of honour.
This is where you become mean. If somebody had given you the chance to do this in your final game, would you have gone along with it?
My football career.
Or did you not want to play just like
just
10
ended in a damp squid, which I actually think which is how a football career, that all these people that go out of the top and guard of honours, it just doesn't sit well with me. Just
even Xabi Alonso.
Why this big razzmatazz? Let's all line up. And I think it's disrespectful for the 2,000 Sunderland fans that went there to cheer the team on and try and, you know, see them try and win, where obviously the game's a sort of a circus parade. I think it's something that he'll probably look back in years ago and thinking, not sure that looks good.
Does he get bad advice? Is what it was on when talking about.
I don't know what advice that's come from or where that's, but that's, there's better ways to do it than that.
For me, it really didn't bug me, but then again, I wasn't at the game. I was home trying to watch 10 games at once, which is not easy and not possible, actually. Were you offended by this, James? I mean, I'll ask you this, because you're not of the same generation as Scully. Did it bother you?
My honest reaction watching it was that it wasn't outrageous. It was a bit weird, probably a little bit over the top. Equally, you could argue that Terry, as a great servant of the club, deserved that send-off. And I certainly didn't think, as some did, that the integrity of the game was impugned. This idea that, you know, all football games need to be played at absolute 100% intensity and that you need to be trying your best to win at absolutely every occasion of the match is a nice idea in theory, but I don't think it's a kind of sacrosanct principle in reality, because
this is the perfect segue into our next debate topic. I know we have this idea that everybody plays 100% and the travelling Sunderland fans and what were they expecting and blah, blah, blah. But I just look at the end of the season, City scoring 5 goals away from home against Watford, Spurs getting 7 2 weeks in a row. Was it 7 they got against Leicester? And who cares? You shouldn't be playing football on a Thursday night. It's just stupid. I look at this last 6 games, Watford, no points, West Brom, 1 point. Sunderland, 3 points. Middlesbrough, 4. It's all kind of depressing. I don't know. I did not enjoy yesterday. I did not enjoy watching City score 5 times. I don't blame them.
It was almost like the end of season was last week.
That's exactly it. And I'll tell you what.
Can bring Crystal Palace into that, because Crystal Palace...
I don't want to pick on Crystal Palace.
No, but I think it's a good point as well that they were fantastic against Hull at home. It was their, like, cup finals, and then yesterday they go to Old Trafford against Manchester United youth team and literally just down tools.
I'm gonna throw this out there, and I know we all look at the past and with rose tinted spectacles, but you know, I've been living in this country for a very long time, watching football here for a very long time. This reminds me of some of the nonsense that happened in Italy until very recently, and hopefully won't be happening this year. We're seeing certainly less of, which is that, oh, look, we're safe now. Let's all go on the beach. Or look, we're relegated. You need the points. Aha, we're not going to stand in your way. Or, oh, look, you need to win the Golden Boot for the second year in a row. Please go and score 7 goals in your last 2 games, Harry Kane, right? And I'm not having it go. But it does feel as if there were a lot of teams that totally gave up. And it didn't feel like end of season was like this earlier. Now, Scully, you played in the final game of the season many times in your career. Has it always been this way, or does this feel different than when you played?
I played a final game at Highbury, which was Arsenal's invincible season. And again, it was like a parade, really, of the Leicester side that was relegated. I think Mickey Adams said before he drew the team up and threw his pen over his shoulder and said, good luck with these lot, and walked out. We were 1-0 up with about 20 minutes ago until Arsenal thought, we better step the pace up here because we need our record.
Were you prepared? Were you trying? Were you guys up for it? Or did you just kind of feel like you were just sparring partners?
just sparring partners.
So it happened back then as well?
Yeah. One of the best things that's been introduced in football is the playoff systems in the Football League. And if you look at the Championship, if you look at all three of the football, Championship, League One, League Two, literally every single club has something to play for. It brings so much drama to the end of the season. And I think the Premier League is in danger of, maybe we might get a title race one season every now and again. You might get this fourth, fifth place relegation occasionally. But it's just the last month of the season could end up just being, you know, a snooze fest. Did anyone see League Two in France?
With the guy scoring the
climax. Yeah. That is what football's all about, last day of the season. The excitement of all those teams. And obviously the disappointment of all those teams as well. But it certainly wasn't like that yesterday, was it?
Yeah, I suppose the issue with the playoffs is the issue of formats. They've done it in Belgium, of course, with, I think, mixed results. I don't know. I think in the end it probably comes down to the pride of the players.
Well, for example, okay, bottom two go down. One, two, three. Next four, playoff.
We have that in Italy, in the second division. We call it the playouts rather than playoff. I have no problem with that. And you could even tier it so that if there is a big enough gap, then you don't do it. Because obviously, I think it's probably unfair if somebody's 10 points clear.
No, that's how it works, isn't it?
But there's ways of doing it. You can play off against the teams who just miss out in the next tier down.
It's a bit over the top for what was a very good campaign up until the last day. And I think if you go through every result, yesterday on Sunday, there was a reason for the result.
Which is what? That Watford didn't show up?
Watford had
Watford
a personnel
Crystal
crisis.
Palace from Gatwick departure lounge.
Yeah, you can explain it. It's not that anyone was deliberately.
What about West Brom's end
throwing
of
the game?
Seriously, if you were Tony Pulis, but you know, this is the thing. Nobody deliberately, or very few people deliberately, throw games.
As a professional footballer, you do not want to get injured at the last two games of the season and have half your holiday cut short with an injury. And that is an insight to a player's mindset.
Shame on you.
I know. I remember years ago, final game of the season. I think it might have been my first year here or something like that. It was Chelsea against Bolton at Stamford Bridge. Bolton, they needed a win to stay up. Chelsea had nothing to play for. They'd already qualified where they were going to qualify for. And the whole ground was singing, let them score, let them score. But they didn't. And Bolton were relegated. And I felt like, yeah, this is the way it should be. I don't know if that would have happened today. The thing you said, like, was it West Brom were playing Swansea? Remember that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. There was a scenario where West Brom were playing Swansea, and Swansea would have needed points to send Palace down, given Tony Pulis's history with Palace. Yeah. You know, and how that game would have been a foregone conclusion. I don't know. This was not fun for me.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Manchester United are in the Europa League final. They play Ajax on Wednesday. They're heavily favoured, not least because Ajax is an absurdly young side. Mourinho's put his eggs in this basket. How do we feel about it going into it?
If ever that saying meant anything, that saying's been going for centuries, hasn't it? Putting all your eggs in one basket, and it's only ever found its moment.
Shopping.
It's only found its moment in time now. now with Mourinho. It's never been more apposite than with Mourinho putting his eggs all in the Europa League final basket.
How much are you desperate for Ajax to win, Alison?
Really quite keen on so many levels. I mean, I'm going to be there and I will be completely impartial. And if United play well and win, I will praise them for playing well and for winning. It's just the build-up has been very peculiar compared to most European finals I've watched the build-up to, in that there is the whole eggs in one basket thing, the U-turning of despising the Europa League and then suddenly saying it's going to complete the Manchester United dynasty by winning it. The way Mourinho has treated, we've been talking about how attitudes to league games, well, I think Mourinho's attitude to league games has bordered on, not corrupt, but I mean, it's bordered on something distasteful,
that's
I think.
Word. But yeah, it is distasteful.
It has been distasteful. It's honestly as though Mourinho thinks the Premier League suddenly exists just to annoy him. And I mean, absolutely ridiculous to take that line. This is what we have. This is the job you've taken. Accept it. I just do not know. I mean, James will have better insight than me as to how that might affect the dressing room. But if you know you're being rested for one game only 6 weeks ago, if you know you've been playing knowing that you're not going to play in the final, maybe just make the bench 6 weeks ago, how that all grows to a crescendo on the night in Sweden, I have no idea. It could backfire horribly.
You know what's funny? Until very recently, he'd reached the semi-final of every single cup competition he'd been in. So he knew he was playing the Europa League. He knew he was playing the League Cup. He knew he was playing the FA Cup. He knows that he's a good manager. He knows he has a big squad, to the point that he tried to reduce it by ditching Schweinsteiger and Schneiderlin in January. Did he have some injuries? Yes, although, then again, remember he said that Jones and Smalling and Shaw, we always wonder whether they were really injured or whether they were just being wusses. Ibrahimovic, Mata, whatever, stuff happens. But for me to go and flat out complain, it just doesn't, I kind of have a visceral reaction to it. It doesn't sit well. I'm okay with you saying we have a ton of injuries, we're going to rotate the team, we're going to give other guys a chance, you know, basically everybody has an opportunity with me, my doors will dress it up that way. But to come out and say we don't want to play these games, does it annoy you?
Could he have handled it better? I think so, but deep down he's probably only telling the truth.
What lineup do we think he's going to play? Why don't you run us through the lineup? Actually, first of all, De Gea or Romero? Is he definitely going Romero?
Yeah.
Or was he just a big fat fibber?
Well, no, I think De Gea's off. I don't think you'll see De Gea again. Might be right.
First point, is that a stupid thing to do?
What?
Because, hey, look, I know he's Romero's, his Europa League goalkeeper, and a lot of clubs do this. But the other guy's a lot better. This is your chance to get in the Champions League. If you view this as like a Champions League player.
The other guy said, I don't want to be here next year. And he's gone, right, okay, move along.
You're pretty sure that he said that?
I'm guessing, but my gut feeling says that.
We were talking about this like a couple of weeks ago. I think if you want to have really, really good backups, and I think Romero certainly is.
Really?
He's very, very good.
I think he's terrible.
No, I think he's awful.
No, I think he's done all right this year, but you're talking about a guy who was a reserve goalkeeper to Daniel Subasic at Monaco, not like 100 years ago, but...
But you could equally say you're talking about a guy who's played in the World Cup final.
Because the brilliant series of great Argentine goalkeepers came to an end.
My personal opinion is that Romero has done pretty well this season, from what I've
seen. Who's better?
And is a better than average backup goalkeeper.
Who would you, if you want to give yourself the best
possible... Sure, but my point is, if you're going to have a better than average backup goalkeeper, you're not going to have that situation if you just play De Gea at every single opportunity that you can and then renege on your promise to play Romero, because then you're going to alienate your backup goalkeeper. You won't have such a good reserve. I mean, it's just a question of striking.
The goalkeepers is that they hardly ever play, except in competitions nobody cares about.
But sometimes they have to, you know, if your keeper gets injured.
I would have thought in the balance of probabilities, you're better off starting De Gea. Unless, as Scoey said, De Gea has gone and told Mourinho, I don't want to be here next year. Is that what you're suggesting?
I think so, yeah. Reading between the lines, I think it's been bubbling for years, hasn't it? But it looks like he's not going to be there next season.
Or... the choice of Romero is Mourinho's way of subtly reminding people that it is a Mickey Mouse cap, and he was right all along, and this is his one gesture towards that.
David De Gea is a fantastic goalie. You'd have him in your team all day long. So it's obviously politics there, isn't there?
Another layer in all this, and I'm sorry if I keep bringing it up, but I do think there's a major conflict of interest in football and nobody seems to care. Mourinho's agent is also David De Gea's agent. Yes, we're all clear on this. Nobody seems to bring this up on a regular basis, so I've taken it upon myself to remind everybody of it and how in most other industries this would not be allowed. And I think
we're talking about football here.
Yeah, I know, but it doesn't mean it needs to be run like this. I just don't get this at all. And how Jorge Mendes can do what's in Mourinho's best interest, one client, and what's in De Gea's best interest, another client. I don't see why you put somebody in a situation where he has to walk that tightrope. But hey, that's just me. Back four, Scully, run us through it. It should be pretty obvious, yeah?
Back
no
Bailly,
of course.
Darmian left back, Smalling.
Blind. Valencia.
Yeah, Valencia, midfield.
Yeah.
Three of Pogba,
Herrera.
Do you think he'll play Fellaini?
Carrick?
I think that's the interesting one.
Yeah, Carrick? I do think he will play Fellaini, yes.
Nobody likes Carrick?
I think it'll be Fellaini, Herrera, Pogba, Rashford up top, Mkhitaryan to the left, and possibly Lingard on the right.
Lingard ahead of Martial?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he'll play Lingard ahead of Martial.
All right. Juxtapose this with Ajax, where I actually looked at this. Out of their stronger starting 11, that's going to start. Everybody knows about how they're ridiculously young, an average age of 22, and it's only that high because Lasse Schön is 30 years old. Do you know how many of those players started at least 15 games last season?
It's either going to be a lot or not a lot, otherwise you wouldn't bring it up. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not a lot. It's 4 out of 11. So this isn't just a ridiculously young team. It's a team that's ridiculously inexperienced. I find that absolutely, absolutely extraordinary. And
but they're on the right trajectory.
Are they?
Well, they're going from not doing a lot to doing a lot.
Yes.
Making a final, in that sense, yes.
But
they had a fantastic result against Lyon, didn't they, in the semi-final. Lyon are a strong side, got some good players.
They've lost in every round of the Europa League since the round of 16, I think.
Predict the scoreline.
I don't know. I think United walloped them personally.
Yeah.
I just don't think that they're. I just don't think they're particularly good. Prediction, Gearbrandt.
I think Manchester United will win. I don't think it will be as comprehensive as you suggest. But
give me a scoreline.
1-0.
Very Mourinho-esque.
I'm gonna go 3-2 Ajax. Why not? Someone has to.
Scully.
I'm gonna go Manchester United by the skin of their teeth.
What, you think 8-1 or something?
No, I'm going to go 4-1 with Romero throwing one in just to annoy Gearbrandt. Enough of this. How about some quick hits? It takes a while and it might have been different if Dejan Lovren had been sent off, but Liverpool dump Middlesbrough 3-0 and secure that top four finish. Alison, give me three Liverpool players you'd like to say goodbye to and three they absolutely must hang on to.
Well, we must hang on to the lovely Lallana, the magnificent Mane, the clever Coutinho. I don't really want to say who we should get rid of, but as you're going to make me, I will say Dejan, he isn't the man. Origi, he's never done it for me. And Karius, because he couldn't.
Okay. I would have thought you might say Grujic or
no, I'd be
like
cheating.
That.
I could easily bring up loads of names that no one's heard of.
Harry Kane's second consecutive hat-trick brings his seasonal total to 29 in the league, and he wins the Golden Boot. And he actually has 35 goals in 38 appearances this year, which is a tremendous strike rate. Scully, your love of Kane is well chronicled, as is the fact that you'd like to have him at United. But tell me, how far back do you have to go to find an English striker this good in the Premier League?
You have to go quite a long way back, actually. I think Pochettino's right. What he said yesterday, he's one of the best in the world, and I agree with that. I think.
So how far back do you go? Shearer? Early Rooney?
Rooney sort of owing that era.
All right. 10 years?
12.
City stomp all over Watford, 5-0. Pep says he knows the Premier League better now. James, what do you think the biggest lesson he has learned is? And if you were him, would you look to shift Aguero, despite what he's saying? And if so, at what price?
I personally think he'd be crazy to try and sell Aguero. I mean, the way that everyone has sort of hailed Gabriel Jesus and sort of said, well, they don't need Aguero anymore, has been ridiculously kind of premature. I mean, Jesus has looked very good in a handful of games, but Aguero is arguably the outstanding player, I think, in the Premier League over the past three seasons. I'm pretty sure he's been involved in more goals than anyone bar Kane in that time frame. I mean, he's a player of proven quality. He's actually looked like he links up very well with Jesus on the occasions that they've played together. I cannot see the rationale for selling Aguero, personally.
And what's the big thing he's learned this year, do you think? He says he's learned stuff. He says he knows it better than last year.
I don't know if he's learned one big lesson. I just think he's got, he as we've said before, he got a lot of big decisions wrong at the start of the season, from the Claudio Bravo decision to, you know, counting on Kompany's fitness. I don't think there's any kind of one guiding principle necessarily. He's just got to try and, you know, get more of those decisions right next season.
I think one big thing is that if you're going to play a system where your fullbacks see so much of the ball, you need to have fullbacks who are good and comfortable on the ball. I think if we don't like them, we say that they have to change. If we do like them, we say they're clever enough to evolve. I think he's going to evolve. Alison, you need to explain some Wenger to me. Now, he still hasn't decided to tell us if he's staying or not, but he concedes that the conditions in the last 6 months were horrendous and that maybe he contributed to it. What's the deal here? And I'm going to be kind to Wenger and give him an out. Remember like 6 weeks ago when he said that he was about to go and announce his decision and then he never did? Is the reason he didn't perhaps related to Alisher Usmanov's bid and the uncertainty for Stan Kroenke's shares and the uncertainty that created around the club? Or should I not give Wenger an out? Because I thought, you know, he's like, oh, I want to stay if Kroenke's here, but if this other dude buys the club, then everything might change.
I don't think anyone believed that there was a chance that Kroenke would sell. There was no evidence that Kroenke would say, sure, I don't care, have my shares.
If you're Wenger and you know that Kroenke's received a huge offer that will make him £300 million or whatever it was, and because Kroenke doesn't speak, because he's silent Stan, in your heart of hearts, you don't know what he's going to do, right?
But all the evidence was that he was happier than he'd ever been, and his family were happier than they'd ever been, being involved in Arsenal. There was no evidence that there would be a change of ownership.
It's a bit of a moral issue here. If someone's willing to buy the club, that's going to put a lot more into the club than what you're currently doing, do you not owe it to the fans to...
We don't know that Usmanov's going to do that.
After the West Brom game, he said he knew, he'd made up his mind. He didn't say he was about to make an announcement. He said he'd made up his mind that he knew what was going to happen. And I think he regrets saying that. I think he regretted saying it straight away, actually, because that didn't really help. The flip side is, almost from that point on, Arsenal started to get their act together on the pitch. He was in a strange mood after the game against Everton, just using that word horrendous to describe the atmosphere at the club. He looked like he was ready to explain why it had happened.
All right, enough Arsenal. Jose Mourinho sends out the youngest ever United lineup in the history of the universe, and Palace are defeated 2-0. Scoey, we know why he did it, but do you reckon any of these kids will be in the first team in the next year or two? Anybody stand out for you?
Probably not, no.
You don't like any of them?
No, I do. I like all of them.
You think they're all future James Wilsons?
I don't.
What happened to James Wilson? You probably know.
James,
in fact, you probably subscribe to a Twitter account that tells you what every single former United youth player is doing right this minute.
No, because you know the account we're talking about and you don't like that account, do you?
No, but you do. So I don't like it.
No, because he
I thought you nerded out on United Academy products. Any of these guys look like they have a future?
I quite like the left-back Mitchell. I've seen Mitchell quite a lot. I quite like him. Gomez is, everybody talks about, but he's very, very, very young. I thought Josh Harrop had a very good game as well yesterday. So will they be in the team in a year's time? Probably not.
Okay, but do they have a couple of those guys have a future at United, you think?
No.
None of them? No, Jesse Lingard has a present at United. Presumably some of these guys might be better than the 18-year-old Lingard was, no?
Listen, they're probably all good enough, but it's opportunity knocks, and I don't think they'll get that opportunity, unfortunately.
Southampton lose at home to Stoke, and Claude Puel gets a hammering from the home supporters. James, they finished eighth. It's a bit harsh on Monsieur Puel, no?
I think it's very harsh on Claude Puel. And as you say, if you look at the table, realistically, you know, how much higher could you expect them to finish? I think it's a personality issue. I think because Puel is uncharismatic, people haven't warmed to him. I think if he had the charisma of Jurgen Klopp, I don't think any of the Southampton fans would be complaining. And I think also you've got to take into account that, you know, they reached a cup final as well, in addition to having a very respectable league campaign. And I think there's a kind of wider point in the last kind of couple of seasons. You've had Van Gaal, Kike Sanchez Flores, and now Claude Puel, supposedly, all sacked despite overseeing very good, and indeed in Van Gaal's case, victorious cup runs. And yet we kind of crucify managers for not playing their full strength lineup in cup matches. Well, why bother? It seems like they don't get any credit for it. I mean, you know.
It also seems a little silly that, like, if they'd won the League Cup, would they all be saying, like if Puel had won that game, would they all be saying, like, oh, yeah, Claude Puel, you brought silverware back to St. Mary's, great, you know? And they'd finished exactly where they did finish.
Gab, you were so bored with the Premier League games on Sunday, but La Liga and Serie A, much more exciting, titles decided. What happened?
Well, no surprises there, Alison. Juventus won their sixth straight Serie A title, thereby setting a new record. I think it was actually probably their most hard-fought title, though, because they had a four-point lead over Roma. Roma and Napoli, I thought, were fantastic this year, and it was actually a case of Juventus being better. You have to go all the way back to Conte's first season at Juve in 2011-2012 to find the last time that Juve were really pushed this hard domestically. In Spain, it was always going to go this way. Effectively, Barcelona had to win against Eibar, and Real Madrid had to lose against Malaga. They scored within 2 minutes. Malaga did put up a fight. A lot of people thought they wouldn't because they're coached by former Real Madrid legend Micho. But Keylor Navas did make some huge saves, but in the end, they saw it out. And Barcelona, actually, they nearly imploded. They went 2-0 down at home against little teeny tiny Eibar, and then they came back, and Messi missed a penalty, which would have given him a hat trick. But Real Madrid win only their second Liga title in 9 years, which, if you think about it, is pretty remarkable, given they've won 33 overall. Right, that's all we've got time for today, and many, many thanks to my guest, Alison Rudd, James Gearbrandt, and James Scowcroft. This time next week, of course, we could be looking back on United winning another treble after the one that they won with Sir Alex back in, what year?
1999.
Could this be United's second ever treble? What do you think, Scully?
Let's hope so.
Will you call it a treble?
No.
I don't recommend that you do. Not quite the same thing.
Not in front of you.
Thank you. Remember, you can subscribe to our newspaper, just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. You get highlights of every single game in the Premier League, Champions League, Europa League, FA Cup, and Gearbrandt's personal favorite, the Scottish Premier League. Leave a review for us on iTunes if you're listening on an Apple device. We're going to be back next Monday after the FA Cup final, possibly after United's treble, and we'll be picking our teams of the season.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.